Welcome to the 12th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue on homelessness and poverty in America. The toll-free number anyone may call for this broadcast is 1-877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody followed by the number 8. If you're homeless, formerly homeless, or afraid you're about to be homeless, you may also call 1-866-LEFT-OUT. William Wordsworth once wrote, "To her fair works did nature link the human soul that through me ran, and much it grieved my heart to think what man has made of man." Nature, in the form of Hurricane Katrina, did plenty of harm to the Gulf Coast, but what have we, the human beings, done to show our better natures? In particular, what have we done for the children? We'll ask these questions right after this.
Street Poetry, Poverty Is, by K. Pedler Bridges, printed in Spare Change, the homeless paper of Cambridge, Massachusetts. Poverty is incredible. It's incredulous. It's having no credit. It's having no voice. It's blank stares. It's wearing someone else's shoes, and they don't fit. It's no zipper in your coat, no faith in yourself. Poverty is dead phone lines, cold rooms of promised heat, cars without wheels, friends that don't call. Poverty is eyeglasses that don't help to see, pockets with holes, dirty socks, keys that don't fit anything. Poverty is crossing the street when you see old friends. It's old friends crossing the street when they see you. It's filling out forms that get you nothing or nowhere. It's lonely nights, constant interrogation. It's knowing everyone you talk to gets paid, and you don't, and they think you're worth nothing, and in it for a free ride. Poverty is incredulous. It's incredible. It's you hating salesmen. It's you hating counter ladies. It's you hating store clerks and all of them hating you right back. Poverty is letters and forms about you, but nobody writing to you. Poverty is your clothes 2 days past dirty and knowing you're going to have to wear them 2 more. It's dirty sheets when you get sheets. It's heating grates that don't give no heat. It's light bulbs that don't give no light. It's a dollar late and, yes, a day short. It's being told, that don't count in your case. It's doors that won't open. It's windows that won't shut. It's not being able to live in the town you grew up in. It's not being in the book. It's no legal address. It's being stuck in a line that never moves. But it don't matter. You got no business anyway. Poverty is incredible. It's incredulous. It's like being the word ain't. The Wonder by Jungle Cat. Printed in Street Roots, the homeless paper of Portland, Oregon. I'm not mentally ill. I'm a space-age person. I need to be about my agenda. The sun came into my room yesterday with incandescent light. It knew me. Help me, central sun. Bring me out of madness into the light so I can share the wonder of the stars. Dandelions by Buddy B. Anthony, printed in Street Roots, the homeless paper of Portland, Oregon. You who garden and weed us out, we come back to you and back again, like an arch-villain long hair versus a military skull sculpture specialist. What with your weed be gone and fancy, I have arrived riding mowers. I mock your feverish efforts to zone us out. We belong here and bring you spores by the scores against your best blockade by lawn patrol, beauty police, as you attack our island paradise, standing alone against a vast sea of insipid green grass, shunned still by the permanent press set which occupies our neighborhoods. We hunker down, moving stealthily to the next squared-off unit of virgin territory. Hobo synthesis, on to the next dull, fertile battleground to do our bidding. greedy to pull at my roots like a Saturday night sin, then as if you had really made the world a better place. You toss my suffocating blossoms into black impersonal mulch bags. Did you know I can cop a superfine thick rich layer of compost at the city dump where my cousins, sisters, and brothers lie in wait, patiently in exile? We keep going and growing in number. Through sheer will and ingenuity we persevere, expectant of your imminent arrival. This and only this keeps us hungry for the kill, our leaves razor sharp.
Hi, everybody. It's me, Nobody, and welcome back to the fifth hour of the Homelessness Marathon, where we are discussing issues of homelessness and poverty in the United States, and particularly here in the Gulf Coast post-Hurricane Katrina. I'm speaking to you, if you're just joining us, from Pass Christian, Mississippi, which is very near to what has been officially declared as the Ground Zero, where Hurricane Katrina came ashore. With me here in the booth are Renee Soule, who is the director of Youth Build here in Mississippi, and Terry Latham, who is the director of Hope Haven. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And you both work with youth in different ways, and in this hour, we really want to concentrate on the question of what is happening to the youth in this storm, as a particular in the aftermath of the storm, you know, this particular population. Renee, let me start with you. Who do you work with exactly? What do you do? And what is it you're seeing?
At Youth Build, we work with young people from the ages of 16 to 24 to provide them with an alternative to choosing a positive lifestyle. We teach them a vocational skill, construction training, and they work on the homes of the Katrina survivors. And therefore, in helping the Katrina survivors, they help themselves. And then we also provide leadership training, GED instruction, and a lot of soft skill trainings around that year, so that young person, when they finish with us, they can go back out into the community and become productive and an asset in their community.
Now, you are a minister, are you not?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So, and one of the things that I think people may not understand around the country is in the Gulf Coast of Mississippi, the religious organizations have an enormous role, I think bigger than any place I've seen in the country, really, because the infrastructure is more around the religious groups here than it is around other kinds of nonprofits.
Well, it is, but also, I mean, it's just the mission of many faith-based organizations, religious organizations, to reach out and to help. And it's a known fact that here on the Gulf Coast, 60 to 70% of the work done around helping the Katrina survivors was done by these faith-based institutions.
Now, well, 60, I've heard estimates as high as 95%. So, in fact, I heard one person say 100%, but maybe they were just being a little, you know, over the top. But let me ask you this. Did you work with youth before Hurricane Katrina?
Yes, I did, back in the D.C. area.
Okay, but not here?
No.
Okay, so you can't really testify to the change, but can you tell us, do you see a difference in the problems of the youth and the attitudes of the youth here from what you saw in D.C.?
Oh, most definitely. Well, here, especially with Katrina, the safety net that's supposed to be in place has got totally blown away. And they are just out there, and there's really no plan to address the needs of these young people.
And you're actually now saying Washington, D.C. is notorious for having a lack of services, and you're saying it's worse here.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, that if you're listening, you know, that should tell you a lot. Terry, tell us about who you work with.
We run the local shelter for abused and neglected children here.
I can't hear your mic. I don't know what's going on here. Maybe we can get you another mic temporarily.
Right. How's that?
All right. I guess it was just accidentally turned off or something. But anyway, okay. Go ahead.
Yes, we run the local shelter for abused and neglected children here, and we also run the CASA program here on the coast. So we work, the area we work in is with children who are in crisis and abused and neglected children who have been taken into custody of the state of Mississippi and then placed with us.
Now, CASA, for people who don't know, stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocate, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So, and are you working with a somewhat younger population here than Tara, than Renee is?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we start basically birth through 18. So anyone who's deemed a kid, they're our purview.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that's very good. And, and did you do this work before Hurricane Katrina?
We did. We've been around 14 years now.
And what change have you seen after Katrina?
Well, it's grim. All along the Gulf Coast area, basically the three coastal counties, we've seen an increase in child abuse and neglect in all the communities. In fact, the official statement is it's basically gone up since Katrina 300%. Number of children being taken into custody or being abandoned by their families.
Well, this is kind of shocking. You're saying that there are people abandoning their children under the pressure of finance or whatever it is post-Katrina?
Yes, as a matter of fact, what they're doing is, in some cases, they just walk into the local Department of Human Services, our Child Protective Services here, and they've just reached the end of their tether, and they say, we have no place to live, we're living in a car, we've lost our jobs, we have no money, we have no food, we cannot care for these children, and they're turning the children over to the state.
And they're doing this actually because it's the best thing they can do, they feel.
They feel it's the best thing, and it's about the only thing they can do. So, they don't even have get-out-of-town money. They can't go anywhere else and relocate.
So these are not abandoning parents. These are parents who are struggling to, as a last resort to help their kids.
That's correct.
Well, that's... sad. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, it's kind of self-explanatory. It's really bad. I did have someone on the phone who was waiting patiently over the break, so let's go to the phone and then we'll come back. Is Dak there from Portland, Oregon?
Hi.
Hi, Dak. What's on your mind?
I wanted to just kind of put two things in. I'm 20 years old and got out of high school when I was 18. And as soon as I graduated high school, my parents took me out of the house, and I basically had, nowhere to go. And I was kind of lucky as during high school I was an artist, and I've been able to use my music to support me for the last year and a half, as well as a summer job. But currently I am not able to pay my month's rent, and... We'll see if I'm able to make enough money to pay that. But I wanted to also add something to kind of the direction of the conversation as to what is a cause of kind of this national crisis about housing, which is that it's an essentially too expensive for a lot of people. And to kind of relate that to capitalism, and that a lot of the renting market and even house building market is driven by money as a priority before actually housing people.
I don't know if we'll get any disagreement about that. People are looking to make money in this society, and we don't have a large public investment. But hang on a second, Dak, because Renee, this is an underreported part of the homeless population, not just here, but nationally. People, kids who've gotten thrown out of their homes. Sometimes they're thrown out because they're gay. Sometimes they're thrown out because they've left because they're being abused. There could be a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing with me is I would have gone to college, but I have no way to pay for college. My parents can't pay for it. There's just simply no way for me to do anything else besides attempt to work. And as a musician, it's kind of infrequent work on the weekends. It's not a steady income, and it's very hard to budget, a month-to-month living situation.
Hang on, Dak. Renee, is this the first young person you've heard in this situation?
No, not at all, Jeremy. And to the young man, I would say that this is one of the reasons why Youth Build exists. It reaches out to young person like yourself to provide you with a marketable skill that you're able to take care of yourself and provide free training and some living allowance funds while you're going through the training and set you up into what we would call a high growth, high demand position so that you're able to take care of yourself. And so this is something that is going on across the country, and Youth Build is an organization that is hoping to address this type of issue.
Is Youth Build a national organization?
Yes, it is. It's in 44 states,
okay,
and it's over 244 programs.
How can you know that you're going to train someone for a skill they can be employed at when the entire employment structure of the country is crumbling?
Well, that is a challenge now.
I mean, I got to ask, you know.
There's the hard part.
Right. That has become a challenge, and that's where we as a national organization have to focus in on those occupations that are in high demand and high growth and then train around those areas. But this economy is making it even more difficult to do that at this time. And so we need good government. We need good management for not only the mainstream society, but for the youth who are going to be our future leaders in America.
Dak, what instrument do you play?
I actually have played a lot of instruments, but I actually am able to make money DJing.
Oh, okay.
And, so I've been fairly lucky in that I started doing that at a very young age. And through high school, when I was supported by my parents, I was able to develop that into something that was semi-marketable. It has been a challenge because it is a very irregular thing in terms of the money that you're making.
Let me give out those numbers again. If people want to get in on this conversation, you can call 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT, and the lines are pretty much open, and we will be happy to have your calls. Dak, where are you currently sleeping at night?
Currently, I am in a house that I rent with three of my friends from high school. And one of my friends is supported by his grandparents in that they pay for his school and his portion of our rent. And me and another our roommate are having to pay for housing by ourselves. And my roommate has not been able to find a job for about 6 months. And I actually have been attempting to find a job during the week, but I haven't been able to. So I will be in a house tonight, can't live there if you don't pay the rent. So
your problem is not that you're not housed. It's that your housing situation is not stable.
It's that it's not stable and that I'm not really able to, even though I have a marketable skill, which and I've, you know, developed into something that I'm able to make money, which a lot of people don't have, especially coming out of high school. And even though I have that, I haven't been able to establish a steady enough flow of income to be able to support a normal life. I mean, I lost a bunch of weight over last summer because I just simply didn't have enough food. I've attempted to get on food stamps several times, and
they won't take you on food stamps.
Well, there's other issues in that it was more on the part of my inability to follow through in the process.
I see. All right. Okay.
And there's also been, I should say that there's been some other issues in my life, such as depression and those kind of things, which can influence, one's ability to be successful. But
you've had some blows, though, so you have reasons to be depressed. So I can understand that. I think we all can. Well, listen, Dak, yeah. I have to move along, but I think you've helped to enlighten people because I know there's, tens of thousands of kids in your situation who are, living marginally, hoping they can hang on to their housing, doing what they can to survive. And I think actually you're luckier than some to have any kind of skill where you don't have to, God knows what, to get some money. So we wish you all the best.
And a lot of my friends just, especially coming right out of high school, have no idea what they're trying to do in life or any way to support themselves. So,
well, we thank you very much for sharing that because there's more youth in trouble than anybody really realizes. And you're the perfect caller for this segment of the show, and we want to thank you very much, Dak. Terry, let me turn to you. I don't mean to say if what you're saying is true, given what you're saying about people are now turning their kids over to the state here because they're so desperate at this point, does the state have the ability to cope with all these kids?
Well, unfortunately, the state of Mississippi is one of those states that had a poor record of caring for the kids that came into their custody. In fact, they recently settled a lawsuit, and they admitted to 15 years of abuse and neglect of the children in their custody. So that's not a good answer for where the kids are going either. The budget here in the state's been cut, and we don't have enough social workers, we don't have enough foster homes, and we certainly don't have enough facilities to care for these kids. So frequently, all too frequently, they're placed in marginal situations where they certainly can be in danger. So it's not a good thing.
No, I adopted my kids out of the foster system, so mm-hmm. I've spent not a little time knowing about the foster system, and I know that actually your risk of being abused in the foster system is often higher than in the general population, maybe by the other kids, not even necessarily by the parents, but overcrowded foster homes are just not good environments very often.
They're not. And, you know, that young man that called in, one of the other problems is the state has no kind of aging out system. You turn 18, you're in the foster system or you're in the shelter or a group home, and you turn 18 and you're out on your own, out on the street. And of course, 18-year-olds can't take care of themselves in this economy, especially. Some of the other things that we've seen down here, and again, you know, not pushing statistics, but the dropout rate in the high school has significantly increased. The amount of young people that need mental health services, which are virtually non-existent down here, has skyrocketed since Katrina. And I just spoke to the principal of an alternative school, and she said one of the things that they've seen is a drastic increase in the behavior problems, you know, in the schools, fights and absenteeism. And now they're having kids, she said the pattern that they've been seeing lately is the 16, 17-year-olds are wanting to quit to try to go to work and bring some extra money into the families. Because of the downturn in the economy. And, of course, there's very few jobs for kids that age.
Well, you've answered my next question, which is, you know, I mean, I'd say you'd think it'd be the opposite. You'd think they'd all be wanting to stay in school because there's nothing out there, but it's because their families are desperate, they're trying to help out.
That's exactly right. And you know, you can envision yourself being 17. And in many cases, we have the men have left to go to other areas for work, or the men have left, period, because they have not been able to provide adequate support to their families, and they can't stand that. You know, that's something they can't face, so they up and leave, and the people that are left here is mom and two or three kids. So the oldest child, you know, boy or girl, feels some responsibility for dropping out of school. And our graduation rate here in the state is the worst in the nation. You know, Mississippi's number one in many areas. Dropout rate is one of them.
And it's just gotten worse since the storm, is what you're telling
it's
me.
It's just it was the poorest, gone downhill.
It was the poorest state in the union to begin with, so Katrina didn't make it easier. Let's take some calls. We got callers, and I want to give out those numbers, 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. We have Jada from Northern California on the line, currently in a woman's shelter. Jada, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon. Jada? Do we have Jada? Did we lose Jada? All right. Well, I guess we don't have Jada. If you're around, Jada, we'd still like to take your call, but let's try Joanne.
Hello, I'm here.
Oh, you are there, Jada. I don't know where you were, but here you are. So let's welcome Jada to the show. Jada, you're in a women's shelter?
Yes.
Tell us your story.
Well, I just wanted to say one thing. Just wanted to say that this is... Hello?
Yes, go for it.
I just wanted to say that this is what you get in a society when women are objectified, hence the patriarchy, which is really macho might makes right. It says to hell with the future and those who painfully give birth to it for war fodder, and that is the wealthiest 1% warmonger's mentality. It makes motherhood a cynical mockery of happiness and beauty. It's jail time for the artistic and the enlightened.
All right, I don't know if I agree with all of that, but that's beside the point.
Well, of course you don't, because you don't understand what it's like.
Okay, maybe
Thank
I
you.
Don't. Well, all right, I'm sorry, Jada. We wanted to hear more about your story, but, you know, I was starting to say, I don't know if I agree with that, but we still want to hear about your situation because We care about people who are in distress situation, whether they agree with everything we believe and vice versa or not. It's not about your beliefs. It's about your needs. And nonetheless, we wish you well, Jada, wherever you are. Again, those numbers are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. Joanne in Olympia, Washington, are you there?
Hi.
Hi, Joanne. Well, I hope you're not going to hang up on me. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your story?
Well, I'm 50 years old, and I live in Olympia, Washington. I've been here for about 32 years. I've left home when I was really young, 15, and, you know, not a great situation. But my point of calling was I've been listening to your show, which is fantastic.
Thank you.
And it just seems like in our society it's a hard situation because we have a double sort of standard going on, and that is that you are sort of, your worth depends on what you do for a living or whether you have a living, and at the same time the structure doesn't really support that kind of belief, even though it created it, you know. And so we have a situation where we have people who can't find work. A lot of jobs are being sent overseas because we live in a capitalistic society where, you know, when it comes to the place where we are now, even middle-class people are struggling. But, I mean, it's a hard situation because more and more people find themselves out of place, and that's not only a place to live in, but a place to in their hearts, in their minds. You know, they struggle with their own worth depending on what they're able to do.
Well, hang on, Joanne. I want to toss this now to Renee, because you're a minister, and these, you know, Joanne is raising an important question. Because if you look at things from a monetary viewpoint, you look at people one way, and if you look at things from a spiritual viewpoint, you look at them another way. And what would you want to say about the issue that that Joanne has raised about what constitutes worth in our society?
Well, certainly America is a materialistic society, and it's based on who has the most toys. And we know that eventually those toys rust, but our society today still values getting to the top mentality, whoever has the goal is successful, and that is not the true mark of success. If you can reach back and help someone, if you can reach out and help someone move forward in life, to me that is success. And I believe that it's changing, but it's a very slow change. I think we can see it more and the types of service organizations. Think about all of the organizations who came here to the Gulf Coast.
Yes. That,
you know, I mean, many, many organizations who did not have ties to this Gulf Coast but saw humanity in need, and out of the goodness of their heart, they came here with their own money, took time away from their families, from their jobs, and they came here and they spent months. Some came back several times. And they continue to do the work to help this community to move forward. So, but we want that to happen without a catastrophe, and I think that's what she's talking about.
Well, there's no question that the outpouring of selfless dedication that has come out to the Gulf Coast is inspiring. It's been great, the volunteers. And Joanne is raising a point. Is this something you see, Renee, among the youth that you counsel? Do you see youth saying, "Well, I gotta have this. I gotta have a little flash. I gotta have a little money, or I don't count for anything." Is that an attitude that has been translated down in the youth that you're working with here?
Absolutely, and it's, you know, permeated again by, you know, what our youth are shown, what they see as success. We look at the movies, we look at the music videos, and what is portrayed as success is really not reality. It's a falsehood of what success is, but they don't understand it because, again, go back to these young people, many of them who are dropping out, many of them who are leaving school at an early age, so they're not mature, they're not developing in their thought process, so they're not able to discern and make that distinction that this is not the true worth of a person, but they see it as, this is how I'm going to make it because this person made it, so I'm going to do it too. and it's a tough road, and we're seeing the results of that.
Joanne, you say you're close to being homeless. What is your situation that's driving you to that?
Well, my situation is not, I'm not really close to homelessness. I have been.
No, it says that in my notes, so maybe they got it wrong. So.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm a nanny.
Uh-huh.
I take care of little children, and I live in a tiny little house built on a flatbed trailer. And so I live kind of off the grid in a sense. But from my experience of growing up, I'm 50 years old. I've traveled all over the states and you know, worked every kind of job I could possibly get, you know. My learning about this is that in this political sort of way that we present life to kids and everything is that this is, you know, if you have these job things where you go to a job and you learn a trade, you know, we're very much orchestrated in the fact that what you do for a living defines you. And that creates this crazy problem of not changing the situation as to why these situations come up. For me, when I listen to your show, I'm like, what is the root of why there are so many people, you know, aside from situations like Katrina, which is just a devastating, you know, thing that is not being taken care of in a way that should be, because it was bad before it happened. I used to live in New Orleans myself when I was mm-hmm. a kid. And it's like, it's a compilation of psychological, political things seems to just kind of fall down and fall down like a domino situation of oh, well, you know, if you can rise to this occasion, you know, the American dream, we can just rise to this position. And if you work hard enough or you do this or you do that, well, that's obviously not true because, you know, we have a situation of, I don't want to go into, you know, capitalism in this, like, you know, I just want to say that we send all these jobs over to other countries, which creates problems in other countries, which creates homelessness in other countries as well as here. It's a very huge problem. It's not just funding, you know, of whatever. We've spent thousands of dollars to go into another country and defecate on them, which created homeless situations for them, and no money here in this country to support people who are suffering from political situations.
Well, like I like to say, Joanne, do the poor march on Washington and demand that their jobs be shipped overseas? You know, the people who make these decisions are not the people who are affected by them.
Oh, I know, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah.
I just feel like the situation is like so much psychologically deeper than what we can't. We're somehow, you know, the money is not what's going to necessarily change that whole situation if we had it. Uh-huh. You know,
well, Joanne, we've got to move along, but I want to thank you very much for your call and thank you for your participation in the homelessness marathon. A pleasure talking to you. Thank you. Just a brief bit of business here. Well, first of all, let me tell you again, out there in Radio Land, we're at 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT if you want to call in. 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. I also want to tell you that we're in Pascristian, Mississippi. We're right really basically almost at the exact ground zero where Hurricane Katrina struck. Right now, it's February 23rd still, and it's 46, 47 degrees roughly here. And Mississippi does get a bit chill.
Yes.
Now, it ain't like the north where we had people calling from Maine with 4 feet of snow on the ground, and it's not like upstate New York where I live. But we always put our broadcast booth outside to symbolize the fact that people are living outside. And I can tell you that when it is 46 or 7 degrees and you're not moving, you're just sitting there, it gets cold. It gets cold. Doesn't sound so bad, but it gets cold. And that's why in a lot of places homeless people walk all night just to stay alive because they got to keep the circulation going. And why we're outside is not just symbolic. It's also because we can report to you, you know, you should realize this is tough. It's tough. It's not for us because we're here for an hour or something, but it's tough for people to be outside. You get cold when you don't have a place. And that's one of the many reasons why it's so important that we bring our population indoors if we can do it. We have a gentleman at the microphone. And your name, sir?
Hi, Yes, my name is Ruben Boudreau.
Ruben, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon. And what would you like to tell us, Ruben?
Well, I live right here.
Close in Pass by. Christian?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And I suffered a kidney transplant and dialysis for 5 years. Had a transplant right before the storm.
Okay.
And I've been just kind of fell through the cracks on FEMA trailers and living on Section 8 housing, disabled. And I'm 61 years old. And I didn't take a FEMA trailer because they told me, landlord said that I couldn't have one on her property. And my land that I own here was unfit to move on. So I turned it down, had no other choice. And I provided my own RV. I've been living in there for almost 3 years. And pretty soon they're going to tell me to move it. Well, I'm waiting on funding to pre-build a house by IRD. But the funding is taking a long time.
IRD is International Relief and Development, and that's a private group. That's not the government.
Right.
So you're waiting on help from the volunteers, yes. The organizations.
And get funding. And what I can't understand is a contractor that I know personally has 5 lots in Pass Christian that had no houses on them ever. And the kind of linchpin on my case is I may not have a house on my land before the storm. When I bought it three years before the storm. But he has properties that he bought to speculate, to invest on before the storm. The government gave this man $30,000 per property to build 5 rental houses for low-income people like me, low-income, disabled, to make the landlords richer and the poor people poorer.
Well, Ruben, thank you for sharing that. You've touched on so many issues, and I want to just kind of unravel what you've said just a little bit. First of all, there's a rule that if you didn't have a house on your property before, you can't rebuild. They won't help you to build a house now. Is that the idea?
I believe so.
Okay. At least in your experience, you're not getting that help. And you're saying Yes. Other people who didn't have houses.
Right. Other people that's investors, that's builders, is getting the $30,000 free money from
right.
the government.
Okay, but we do need the low-income housing, so I'm not arguing
yes,
that point.
We do.
But you're saying that aid should be there for ordinary people too, not just for developers.
Well, yeah, I developed my property. I planted trees on it. I planted all kinds, put fences up and had a belief that I was going to get a house built.
Okay.
And I was going to get help, but it seems like it's starting to fizzle.
Okay. Now, another thing you said, you had a kidney transplant. Are you on disability?
Yes, I am.
And how much, if I may ask, how much do you get for disability?
Well, I only get around $600 a month.
Right. And that's an important point. When you're on disability, you're not exactly in America living the easy life.
No.
It's not enough money to build a house on.
Right? No, and I don't get any food stamps. They said I can qualify for $17 if I make trips down every 2 months to get $17.
It's not worth it.
It's hardly worth it.
Because your gas money is going
to
be
I have
more.
To go pretty far to go, yeah.
Right.
And I don't qualify for that because they said my income is, I don't have any rent to pay, just electric. And they said, I don't qualify, I make too much money.
And I think what you're talking about, and again, this is such an important point because I've learned about this, but we're trying to bring this to the nation. You talk about falling through the cracks. From what I've talked about to people here, there's more cracks than there are places that are solid around here.
I can't find nothing but cracks where I go.
Right. It's just not the aid out there. So you'd think a disabled guy on disability, inspected, detected, they've found you to be disabled, victim of the storm, no housing, you'd think you'd be first in line. Not so.
No, I think people that's has property to rent are getting more help than the people that has property trying to live there.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much, Ruben. Have you got a last comment you'd like the nation to hear?
Everybody's created equal. Let's have some equal for everybody here in America, not only the landlords and the rich. Let's have some for the poor.
Now, before you go, Ruben, now you've touched on yet another point. Were you a communist before Hurricane Katrina hit?
No, sir.
So, in other words, I'm not going to ask you your political persuasion, but this sense that there's not justice down here, would you say that's a widespread belief?
Yes, sir, boss.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to thank you very much, Ruben. Terry, Are you seeing people slipping through the cracks? I mean, this is hard. It's just so much bureaucracy, so little, it seems, overall help for people. What are you seeing down here?
Well, in addition to, you know, dealing with kids, we also deal with low-income families that come and request help for overdue utility bills. And we're basically inundated. I work with many of the social service agencies down here and work well with them. But all of us are running out of money, especially the smaller independent ones that, need donations to stay alive. But even the large ones, Red Cross and Salvation Army, are running into difficulties in meeting the individual needs. The families, when you take a look at how much it costs to meet your basic bills down here, it is not cheap in Mississippi. People used to think it was inexpensive to live down here. It's not anymore. And
it's gotten worse, though, right?
Oh, it's gotten much worse. And so you're looking at a situation with, even before the economy tanked, of individuals earning $25,000, $30,000 a year, just barely being able to scrape by and meet their basic needs. Well, now they're not earning that kind of money. There's not jobs available for two of them to go out to work. Childcare is unaffordable. It's $125, $130 a week per child. Gas went up, of course. You know, it's down a little bit. When you just sit there and do the math, you can't get there from here. Families are not able to bring enough money in to meet their basic needs. And we're seeing families that used to, you know, before Katrina, they owned some place, a small trailer or a small house. They didn't owe anything on it. It was left to them. It was in the family. It was paid off. It wasn't much, but it was theirs. And Katrina wiped all that out, and you can't even sell the property that you owned before. You can't afford to rebuild it. You can't afford to sell it. No one wants it. No one can afford the insurance. And unfortunately, you know, it just seems there's no way out for so many of the people like this gentleman that was on. We see them every single day, and they're starting to give up hope. They really are. And that's, I think, the saddest part.
Well, and you know, there's nothing wrong with being a troublemaker if there's trouble to be made. I mean, it was troublemakers who ended slavery, so let's say thank God for that. But the point is, to say the things you're saying, you don't have to be looking for trouble. You just have to be looking for truth. This is just the way it is down here right now. This is not some agitator saying, just picking on the bad parts. This is really the situation.
It is, and the economy has just made it worse. The unofficial, unemployment that they cite down here is, you know, around 6% or so. But so many people have just dropped out of the job market, and they're not actively seeking jobs, and they're not on the rolls. And there's so many kids that have dropped out of school, they're no longer on the rolls, you know? They've become the invisible segment of our society down here. And it's actually turned into, it kind of reminded me the other night, the movie Grapes of Wrath was on, and I sat and watched that. And it's definitely turning into a society down here of have and have-nots. And what's sad about it is so many of the have-nots are built this place down here. They were born here. They've lived here their entire lives. And now they're faced with the situation of not being able to live here anymore.
Let's take a call from Carol in Longview, Washington. Carol, are you there?
I am.
Well, thank you for your patience. What is your situation?
Well, I live on the West Coast. I'm in Washington State. My phone is going to die, so I just want to say what I have to say real quick.
Please.
I am. I have a college education. I've never been able to use it because my husband got terminally ill, and if I went to work, he would lose his medical insurance. His bills were $20,000 a month. He's been gone 5 years, and I'm too old to even start in my career. My Bachelor of Arts is in international business with a minor in economics. So I do understand about economy. In fact, my thesis paper was on the subject of these corporations outsourcing to other countries jobs. And if you pay attention to the news at all, you know that even Bill Gates is trying to bring in people from India because he's saying that Americans are not educated. we've got kids that are dropping out of school to try to find work to help their families. Does
right.
that not remind you a little of Ethiopia?
Well, it reminds me of the Great Depression. My own father, who actually was fairly famous in terms of what he did in life, he's dead now, he dropped out of school five times in the Depression before he was able to get himself going. And that seems to be where we are.
That's right. And we are being inundated by illegal aliens from Mexico and other countries. And we're educating people for free from other countries by our government in major Ivy League colleges here.
Well, this
and
is a complicated
children,
topic.
Our children and my two girls, I've got one that has been struggling for 12 years to get through law school.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got another one who is still struggling at the age of 37 just to get her bachelor's degree because there is no help from our government.
Yes, we've moved from a society of scholarships to student loans, basically.
Yes, that's right. And
I'm gonna thank you for the call, and you know it's again I keep saying this as a joke, but it's important to remember that. When we had scholarships, and so
okay.
I'm gonna thank you for the call, and you know it's again I keep saying this as a joke, but it's important to remember that when we had scholarships and things like that, and universities were practically free, state universities, this was not a Marxist country. This was a capitalist country at the zenith of its power. Renee, let me ask you this: you know. We feel bad for everybody who's caught up in this mess. Are the kids better off than the adults, or are the adults better off than the kids, or is it about the same for everybody? Where is this really impacting, would you say, the most?
Well, I say that they all are suffering. Certainly, you know, as Terry said, you know, to have a parent have to give their child to the state, and what generally happens is that child is not taken care of in the state system, and so they fall through the cracks. And when they fall through the cracks, they try to make ends meet the best way they can, and unfortunately, they end up in the penal system, and then they become a lifelong, you know, of crime, in and out, and then they become even more of a burden on society. And if we could somehow, you know, figure a way out, you know, to take some of the state funds that we use for incarceration and put them into prevention. Mm-hmm. If we take 1%, you know, of the state detention fund for housing individuals and put it in their prevention to help these young people find a pathway that they can become productive and that they can go back and help their families and that families can come back to their communities, maybe we can help Mississippi become whole again.
In other parts of the country, I'm sure you've seen this in D.C., it's something that we've covered on this show before. It's an unpleasant topic. Well, everything here is kind of a difficult topic. Kids, if they're under the working age, if they're under whatever it is, 16 for a work permit here, the only ways they can make money are prostitution and drug dealing. That's basically kind of what they're limited to.
Right.
Are we seeing a rise in those things here on the Gulf Coast subsequent to Katrina, do you think?
I can tell you what we do know for a fact, that there is a direct correlation between the rise in incarceration and the dropout rate.
Okay.
When you look at that in a community, look at the crime statistics, and there is a direct correlation. So we need to invest in helping our young people become successful in their education pursuits. And maybe it's not going to be college. Back when I was in school, we had shop classes. We had woodworking. We had metal. We had electricity. These are blue-collar careers. These are all careers that allows a person to take care of themselves and pretty much in demand now here on the Gulf Coast. So we need to look at things like that.
So, but to go back to what we were just discussing there, the link you're making is, without getting into the specifics of what everybody's doing, if they're going from dropping out to prison or to jail, they must be doing something in between that ain't right.
Absolutely. And it is mostly drugs and prostitution, mostly drugs. We get young people referred to our program from youth court. And most of the times it's, you know, petty burglary or drugs.
And how do you get them out of that? I mean, well, okay, let me ask you this. You know, because it's like they're used, not so much today, but it used to be an idea. You've got these young people who have gone bad. They're hardened criminals at the age of whatever it is, you know. Are these kids who are irredeemable, or can you turn them around?
Yes, you can. But let's just look at the facts. And Terry talked about this. If you're living in a house, a one-bedroom house, with six adults, 5 to 8 children, one or two people working, there's no food in the house, you're going to do what you need to do to survive.
That's right. So in a way, I know this sounds sort of odd, but some of these kids are doing terrible things out of a kind of nobility of character. They're willing to sacrifice their own well-being to help their families, and this really goes on.
Yes, it is. We see it a lot. And mm-hmm. it's a terrible situation.
Terry, you wanted to say?
Well, you know, before Katrina, in the little Bay St. Louis paper that came on out, there'd normally be 15, maybe at the most 20 individuals listed in the arrest report. Now it's a half a page to three-quarter of a page.
Jeez Louise, you're kidding.
It runs, and that's every week. So you're talking 50 to 100 people listed. Most of them are, you know, you have to be over 18 for them to list. You don't, you know, they can't list juveniles. But our juvenile courts here are packed both days a week. And the and you got 50 to 100 people listed on the crime report. And a lot of it is drug-related, meth, a lot of alcohol problems, a lot of public drunkenness. And that's what happens when people don't have a job, gainful employment, don't have, you know, stable income, don't have a decent place to live. They turn to crime, and they're out there on the streets, and they're causing problems for everyone, themselves included.
Those numbers to call in here are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. And thank you for holding. We have Bernard from Bangor, Maine. Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon, Bernard. Yep. Did we still have Bernard?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, we finally got you, Bernard, so thank you for waiting. And what would you like to share with us here on the Homelessness Marathon?
Well, just that, being up here in Maine, and of course with the, I of course feel for all the hurricane relief survivors out there, but you had a couple calls here from Maine, and some of the, a lot of the people that are homeless up here, of course, they've got to deal with not only being homeless, but also with the weather, and having this is being the sixth blizzard that just happened up here. Of course, a lot of people are homeless up here, and I just went by the homeless shelter today and saw how many people were in there. And the one thing that you don't hear about is there has got to be, and we never hear about it up here, the fact that people have got to sleep outside every night, and when you've got 40-degree below temperature, these people, there got to be frozen people out there, people that are dying that you just don't hear about. And that's a problem, obviously, that, you know, maybe you don't have to worry about down there, but this is a problem that's like, it's not just Hurricane Katrina survivors or homeless people. This is a problem that's it's nationwide, because everybody, and us, ourselves included here, are pretty much just like living on a month-to-month basis and trying to make bills and support your kids and have your heat and have everything like that. We're all pretty much just a month away from being on the streets, and we've been in situations where we haven't had running water. We lived in a trailer where there was no running water, no heat, and you're surviving through winter when you're having to use the restroom outdoors and, you know, huddle around a little heater in order to survive when you've got, a couple kids. We're all in that situation, and, you know, it's not just, homeless people or people that have survived a natural disaster. This is everybody, you know, going to the store and trying to buy food. It's everybody.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, on this desk where I am right now, we still have our candle burning, a memorial candle for all the people who have died homeless. And as I said at the opening of this show, some of them froze to death, and that's a reality.
Right.
And another thing I've already said, and I will say it again, why not? It's very quotable, is when the canary dies in the coal mine, it's not a veterinary problem. Homelessness is just part of a broader condition in society, exactly as you are describing. Now, you yourself, though, are not in a situation of homelessness, but you're feeling the pinch, I take it.
Well, I mean, I've been homeless before, and like I said, my family, we lived in the trailer for a while where we had no running water, we had no heat, and but we had a trailer that a friend of ours was letting us use, and you know, we were supposed to be in the process of fixing up because that's what we used to do. But we were in that situation for a while, and you know, we've managed to kind of get work here and there because I'm an entertainer. I'm an ex-entertainer. So getting back into the job market, because that's what I wanted to say about. They were talking about vocational training. Vocational training is great, but what that does is then you end up getting into the system where then, okay, say you get a job and then you're pushed to get a credit card and you get these credit cards and then you get stuck into the same situation that everybody else is in out there, where I think that it's more than vocational training. It needs to be more like survival training and life training and teaching people that they can be self-sufficient and that we need each other. It's not just individual things. We're going in and getting a job is great, but then what do you do for the next 10 years? Are you just going to become part of the regular society, part of the problem where, you know, you get into a home that needs to be... 20,000 people a day are losing their homes, you know, due to foreclosed, you know, mortgages and things. So, you know, everybody is just, you know, in that situation. And I just don't feel that it's justified where we're here, we are possibly spending trillions in Iraq, and the purpose is to be spreading freedom and democracy when we can't even take care of our own people here. I mean, how can you possibly convince the world that that's what we're trying to advocate and trying to promote when we can't take care of our own people here?
Well, Bernard, I have to say it's a shame you don't have any opinions, but I want to thank you very much. We're running out of time for this hour, so I want to thank you very much for the call, and of course I agree with a great deal of what you say. And as to the other callers on the line, please just hold on through the break because I'm not going to have time to get to you now because I want to wrap up here with Renee and Terry. Terry, what should be done for the youth around here? What, if you rule the world, and we'd be better off probably if you did than some of our politicians, what should we be doing for the youth then here on the Gulf Coast?
Well, you know, it really goes back to the homelessness equation. Kids need a safe place to stay. They need to know that when they leave school that they're going to go home and they're going to have a bed of their own to sleep in, that their parents are, have a job, that there's going to be enough food on the table. If you can give these kids that kind of stability, their chances of growing up to be responsible adults and happy are much better. So really, it's a matter of taking care of the parents' problem. First and foremost, because everything, you know, it's the kids who end up suffering the most. And yes, we do need some more psychological services, and we certainly need some youth programs down here. Kaboom has come down and done a wonderful job of building playgrounds. But, you know, if family hasn't got gas to turn around and get in the car and get to a playground, or, you know, or hasn't got any money, it hasn't got enough food, playgrounds alone are not enough. The Boys and Girls Club down here have done an incredible job with expanding their programs and giving kids a place to go. But
it's just not enough. Renee, would you agree that this is really a grown-up problem being visited on the kids down here, and what should be done about it?
Certainly. It starts at home, and supporting the parents to get back into the home, but not only supporting the parents to get back to the home, but don't we have an obligation to help rebuild the community that was destroyed? That's a community. That's where people, their memories, their lives, and just, you know, if you think about all the communities in America, if it was your community, you know, that got destroyed like this and just scattered to pieces, wouldn't you want your community to come back and become whole and become vibrant? And certainly that's where it needs to start. And the resources, the way the resources are, you know, given out needs to be looked at, because the organizations that are what we call direct service organizations, the frontline organizations who are meeting these individuals, like Terry's organization, like other organizations who are sponsoring the Homeless Marathon, they are working off pennies to do the work that they need to do.
Well, we're out of time, so I wish I had more, but I want to thank you both, Renee and Terry, for sharing with us, and hearing some of this is gonna haunt me. The idea of parents giving up their kids because they can't care for them down here is going to haunt me. And thank you. We'll come back after a short break.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Homelessness Marathon, produced in conjunction with Community Radio WQRZ of Waveland, Mississippi. The opinions expressed in this broadcast are not necessarily those of the producing or participating organizations or of the originating and affiliated radio stations. To order CDs of this broadcast or to contact the Homelessness Marathon, go to homelessnessmarathon.org.